Good morning. Dr. Anthony Fauci invokes the Fifth Amendment in a combative Senate hearing, accusing Committee Chair Rand Paul of pursuing a vendetta.
Any reasonable person who has followed his unhinged obsession with me would readily come to the same conclusion.
Why the DNC is running low on cash, and FIFA hatches a plan to sell a stake of the World Cup.
Just about everybody who's reacted has come out against it and been critical of it. So this is a defining moment for football.
It's Thursday, July 30th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. Dr. Anthony Fauci was on Capitol Hill yesterday to face questions over his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, the origins of the virus, and how federal funds were used in China. It was a fiery, dramatic session, even though Fauci himself delivered one answer on repeat more than 100 times.
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully declined to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Fauci's opening remarks were his only deviation from that scripted answer. He accused committee chair and Republican Senator Rand Paul of waging a campaign against him, leaving him no choice but to stay quiet.
The only conclusion I can reach is that the sole reason he is calling me before this committee is to get me to say something, anything, that could vindicate his repeated public pledges that I end up, in his words, quote, behind bars, unquote.
A visibly frustrated Paul focused his questions on federal funding during Fauci's nearly 40 years at the helm of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Republicans have long suggested Fauci lied about whether his agency funded what's known as gain-of-function research at a lab in Wuhan. That's the practice of enhancing a virus in a lab to study its potential real-world impact. The NIH gave money to a nonprofit called EcoHealth Alliance, which used some of the funds in its work with a lab in Wuhan, China. Back in 2021, Fauci said the NIH had never funded gain-of-function research at the lab, and still argues the Wuhan research in question did not meet the government's formal regulatory definition. Paul took aim at his position.
You've never admitted that it could have been a mistake funding this research in China. The American people weren't asking for a semantics debate over what is gain-of-function. They were asking, does common sense say this research was dangerous in Wuhan? They wanted to know whether their money funded experiments in Wuhan that made bat coronaviruses better able to infect humans.
In the absence of any answers, Republican senators used the hearing to sharply criticize Fauci more broadly for his approach to the pandemic.
You became a narcissist and a megalomaniac and a liar, and you've lied to the American people, and you've lied to this body.
You may have had a 50-plus year legacy of public service, but it ends in total and complete disgrace.
Democrats, meanwhile, largely defended Fauci, noting his long record of public service and praising his efforts to reduce the COVID spread. Here's Senator Maggie Hassan.
I want to start by thanking you for more than 50 years of service to this country at the National Institutes of Health. And it is unfortunate that you have been put in the position that you are in today. And it must be enormously frustrating to know that this hearing is designed to entrap you.
Liz Essley White is a healthcare policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal who covered the hearing.
Republicans were really eager to have this moment with Fauci and to get him on the record on some of these questions that they've been giving him hard time about for years now. You could see the Senator Rand Paul was disappointed that Fauci wasn't going to answer anything. And to the point that the senator said there would be repercussions for Dr. Fauci not answering.
Republican anger was heightened after Senator Paul released some of Fauci's diaries. The diaries were reportedly on government servers that HHS Secretary Kennedy accessed and handed over to the committee. They reveal Fauci's private misgivings about Trump and his reflections of the crisis as it unfolded.
The diaries in Rand Paul's telling offer quite a different picture of what Fauci was thinking and saying privately versus what he was saying publicly.
Senators pointed to Fauci's statements that he had no role in school closures, contrasted with an entry where he suggested that he had, quote, convinced the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio to shut the city's schools at the time, and a January 2020 entry in which he said he didn't think the Wuhan wet markets were the likely source of COVID, and later saying it was.
Now, Fauci's defenders, you know, will say, well, our opinions of what was going on with the science changed, because that's what you have to do, is you gather more information. So some of those things may not have been contradictions, but just the evolution of his thinking.
Fauci, now 85, is retired from public life, but he remains one of the most recognizable public figures from the COVID pandemic, and several years later still evokes strong feelings from those critical of the government's handling of that period. He's received death threats that have prompted him to get security.
I can't tell you how many people email me and said negative things about him. And it's because, you know, some people really did have businesses closed during lockdowns, or, you know, had to say goodbye to their relatives who were in nursing homes, you know, through a glass wall. And they've decided to blame Dr. Fauci for it, whether rightly or wrongly.
In a public letter, more than 150 scientists said that there had been no credible evidence to support these allegations against Fauci and that they amounted to a witch hunt. President Biden had granted him a preemptive pardon, thinking that Republicans would effectively attempt to go after him. Senator Paul said that the committee would vote next week on whether to hold Fauci in contempt for not answering questions. With less than 100 days to go before the midterm elections, the Democratic National Committee and its leader are once again under some serious scrutiny.
The current state of the DNC is pretty weakened at this point.
Elena Schneider is a national political reporter at Notice, who told us about the committee's money problems, its personnel issues, and questions about Chairman Ken Martin's tenure. Democrats are in a favorable political environment based on the president's polling and what typically happens in midterm years. Yet Schneider said that the party's devastating loss in 2024 helped inform the financial challenge now.
There was more than $1 billion that was spent on that race. And I do think that there is a bit of a hangover effect for donors who look at the amount of money that was spent in 2024. Democrats still lost. And the question is, why should I invest in this party again?
The financial issues for the DNC have been acute enough that the committee put its Washington office building up as collateral to obtain a $15 million loan last year. That's happened in the past. But Schneider said that some members took it as another sign of financial strain, especially compared to what Republicans have raised.
The Republican National Committee declared about $128 million in cash right now sitting in the bank with no outstanding debts. And the Democratic National Committee declared $16 million in the bank, but they are currently $18 million in debt, which basically means they are still in the red themselves heading into a midterm year. So that's a real problem for Democrats who are hoping to build out an incredibly ambitious midterm strategy where they do have a real opening to try and flip the House and flip the Senate.
Martin defended the DNC's fundraising in a recent op-ed, saying the party is focused on spending the money it raises rather than accumulating a war chest. As anxieties have grown about the state of the DNC, there's been a lot of finger-pointing at Martin, who's had a tumultuous turn since he started in 2025. He had to apologize after an outcry over a botched autopsy of the party's 2024 performance. Notice and the New York Times also reported that Martin was the source of a human resources probe after throwing a phone in the direction of an aide, an episode Schneider said is somewhat emblematic of his tenure at the DNC.
This flare-up that we reported on, the New York Times reported on as well, in which he threw a phone out of frustration in this moment, really does, I think, sort of capture the level of anger that he himself is dealing with about the way that people see him and his own frustrations about how the job is going, that I think is reflective of a pretty dark and gloomy mood inside the building there.
Notice reports that Martin did apologize to the aide in question. It's not uncommon for the DNC to undergo ideological and personnel-based issues. In 2016, the party forced out its chair during the presidential convention. Many key Democrats have indicated they have little interest in a dramatic move like that right now before the midterms, especially as candidates themselves are bringing in boatloads of money. Former DNC chair Jamie Harrison told NBC News that national party groups like the DNC and the RNC often take the heat from upset voters, especially when their party is out of power.
You go online right now and people will blame the DNC for everything. If the sky is gray, they say, well, it's the DNC that caused the sky to be gray. These major committees really absorb all of the negativity out there about being outside of power, while the candidates provide a fresh face, a fresh choice. And that's where people want to send their dollars.
While top candidates may be able to fundraise their own way through November, lackluster fundraising from the DNC could leave the national and state parties low on cash for 2027 and beyond. The World Cup games might be done and dusted, but controversy off the field is reaching new heights. FIFA President Gianni Infantino has made a big pitch to transform how the world's biggest tournament is run. It's a plan so controversial that it's pitted powerful governing bodies and even the leaders of countries against it.
This is effectively selling off a big stake in the World Cup's commercial rights to private investors.
Martin Ziegler is chief sports reporter for the Times of London and broke the story.
It's for the first time in almost 100-year history of the World Cup. The idea is that around 30% of the commercial interests of the World Cup will go to private investors.
The proposals have been met with fury from parts of the soccer world. The Asian Football Confederation said it was disappointed, and Europe's powerful body UEFA said it crossed a line and is reportedly exploring possible World Cup boycotts. The UK's new Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, meanwhile, said that football does not belong to investors. Infantino argues the plans could unleash the commercial potential and opportunity that FIFA has, and in turn could grow the game. This year's World Cup did bring in record revenue, but Ziegler said that without the US hosting, the next one might see a drop. To find these investors, FIFA is reportedly planning to partner with the private equity firm Thrive Capital, a company operated by Joshua Kushner, the younger brother of President Trump's son-in-law, Jared. Ziegler notes that it's not the only connection to the White House.
A lot of people involved in this scheme, either connected to Trump, a couple of the guys who are other potential investors are donors to Donald Trump. So it does seem like it's very much focused around that White House and connections.
Ziegler told us that critics fear the influence of new finance could permanently change the tournament.
The trouble is, once you bring in private investors, then everything becomes about money. So how do you get more return on investment? Higher ticket prices. They want perhaps more matches. So it expands from 48 teams to 64 teams, becomes even longer. It's every 4 years. Private investors might say, well, you want this every 2 years.
To pull all of this off, FIFA announced on Tuesday it will form a subsidiary company to raise more than $4 billion from outside parties. FIFA would retain ultimate control, and Infantino could become commissioner and manage the World Cup, potentially with a big raise. The FIFA president was already a controversial figure with the public and became used to getting booed whenever he appeared on the World Cup's big screens. But within FIFA, he retains enormous power. To get this through, he needs the affiliated associations around the world to back it. Ziegler says he's offering big financial incentives to try and get it over the line.
He's saying to the 211, if you vote for this, you will get $40 million each association over the next 4 years. If you don't, you'll get 75% less. Now, that's for especially the small associations. That's a massive incentive for them to vote because that could be 10 times their annual revenue, perhaps.
Infantino has given them until September 19th to accept the financial offers. He called it merely a proposal and not an obligation yesterday. Ziegler notes that's not a lot of time for them to wrap their heads around what has become a momentous decision. Here are a few other stories we're following today. U.S. forces carried out a wave of strikes in Iran in what was called a powerful response to an earlier Iranian missile attack on U.S. forces in Jordan. That missile attack was successfully intercepted, but it shattered a brief ceasefire that both sides had agreed to at the end of last week. The U.S. strikes yesterday targeted military command centers, missile and drone facilities, and more, according to the U.S. Central Command. The Federal Reserve announced interest rates will remain unchanged yesterday, but the vote was not unanimous. Three of the committee's 12 members voted to narrowly raise rates to combat lingering inflation that's been exacerbated by oil shocks from fighting in Iran. Fed Chair Kevin Warsh said that they were monitoring the economy and prepared to intervene on rates to keep inflation down, but that it may take time.
This board has been in business for 8.5 weeks. The impatience that households and businesses feel have been going on for 63 months. We are on the job. We will deliver. We are focused like a laser on making sure we can do it. But the suggestion that we're going to be able to do it with our magic wand is one I want to disabuse you and everyone else of.
The Fed meets next in September, and while Warsh has offered little forward guidance, the chance of a rate hike will be back on the table. And finally, one of the world's biggest pop groups is saying no to the Grammys. BTS, the K-pop supergroup, said they would not submit an entry for Grammy consideration this year after releasing a comeback album that soared to the top of the charts in March. Their announcement comes after the Grammys brought in new categories, including Best Asian Pop Performance. And under the new rules, one of BTS's recent hit singles might not have even qualified because a lot of it is in English. In their statement, the band said they hope that music can be heard and loved for what it is, rather than being divided by region or language. In their choice to boycott the Grammys, BTS joins other artists who've made similar moves in past years, including Drake, Frank Ocean, and The Weeknd. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Texas Monthly explores how the shooting of a police officer in Texas was labeled a terrorist plot, and that the truth of the whole saga is a lot messier than prosecutors made it seem. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.